It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Well, of course, we've got a great panel, as always. Alex Lindsay, Andy Iannocco, Micah Sargent sitting in for Renee Ritchie. We'll talk about CES. That's where Renee is this week. We'll also talk about Tim Cook's warning letter from last week and what you would do if you were in Tim Cook's shoes. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 643, recorded Tuesday, January 8th, 2019. An Apple-branded Faraday cage. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Slack. Slack's a collaboration hub for work that makes sure the right people in your team are always in the loop, and key information is always at their fingertips. Learn more at slack.com. And by WordPress, turn your dreams into reality and launch your website at wordpress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month. You can get 15% off any new plan at wordpress.com/MacBreak. And by IT Pro TV. Start your new career in IT or level up with flexible IT training from IT Pro TV. Visit go.itpro.tv/MacBreak. to take advantage of their biggest sale yet. Standard memberships are just $29 a month. For an additional 30% for the lifetime of your active subscription, use the code MACBREAK30 at checkout. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show we get together with the Mac journalists to talk about the Apple world. Alex Lindsay is in studio with us.
Hello, hello.
From the Pixel Core. Hello, Alex. He's got his cup of tea, so he's set. Also with us, he probably has his cane sugar soda, Mr. Andy Iannocco.
We were late, so I no longer have a cane.
He's got his 1893. Even better.
I had this about 40 minutes ago.
Now, you ration those, right? You only can have a certain number of 1893s a day.
I buy one 12-pack per month. If I were foolish enough to drink them all in one day, I am free to do that. But Andy, that means that you will not have any for the rest of them.
That's brilliant.
So I usually, like, when I cook like a real meal, or if I have guests over. So yes, it's the special tipple. Otherwise, it's usually just flavored seltzer.
We should mention that is not Coca-Cola, but Pepsi-Cola.
Well, it's again, it's the 1893 with. Like real cane sugar, and like has a very peppery sort of artisanal taste.
Oh, not really?
To get too Brooklyn about it.
It doesn't taste like regular Coke, Pepsi.
Oh no! Because the regular Coke, the regular Pepsi, it's like really really sweet compared to this stuff. This is designed to be like you really really taste like the cane sugar. You taste like the cola nuts. I can't tell you what is being contributed by what, but it's like a more of a spicy sort of savory sort of taste. It tastes like the best cola you've ever had. It tastes like the sort of stuff that costs an extra. Yeah, exactly. That has to come in a fancy can with a fancy label, and you have to tell yourself again, I can only have this is too tasty without rules. I have to have only 12 of these a month. Or else that becomes medically contraindicated, I think, to have real sugar soda more than 12 times a month.
I think Micah Sargent should feed this to his chihuahuas.
This is a good idea. Yeah. I mean, I just have water and that's
maybe,
no fun.
Maybe would, yeah. Their chihuahuas might actually become like jumpy or something without that caffeine. Hard to imagine.
Regular contributor.
They're going to actually vibrate so quickly that they will ascend to another plane and I won't have them anymore because they will sort of exist in another dimension by drinking that caffeinated beverage.
You'll find Mike at chihuahua.coffee, and he has apparently a nuclear reactor behind him, which is pulsing. I just wanted to warn you, Michael, you may be in trouble. It looks like it's, I don't know, is it time to scram? What are those LED, those weird LED lights behind you?
That is a Lifix light strip.
Lifix. Okay.
Yes. Nice. Yes. Nice. I swear by the Lifix one as opposed to the Philips Hue one, because as you can see, there are multiple colors going on back there. Yeah. The Philips Hue only does one color across the whole doggone thing, and that's boring when you can have all those colors all at once.
Wow. So, the day after we did the show. No, we didn't do it last week. Is this our first show of the new year?
It is.
It is.
Yep. It is. Happy New Year.
Tim Cook began the new year Wednesday, and this is our first chance to get together to talk about it. In fact, I was doing Twig when the chat room told me Apple shares trading's been halted.
What?
That's a big deal. and then Tim Cook's letter came out, a letter to Apple investors, in which he said, we told you in our last analyst call that we expected revenue around $92-93 billion. It's going to be $84 billion. And we just want to let you know, of course, Apple immediately, the stock dropped significantly. Apple went from being a $1 trillion company to a $700 billion company. Aw. Aw. Only number four in market cap in the world.
Now Tim only gets to park in the multi-billion-dollar company lot when he goes to the hunting lodge in Aspen.
I thought there was a lot of, and I use the word Schadenfreude on Sunday. A lot of people. This is what we do yes. as human beings, right? We build right. people up just so we can knock them.
I knew it. I knew it.
I knew it. It is rare. The last revenue warning Apple issued was back in 2002. But they have had other bad quarters. Ben Thompson, I thought, wrote a good piece, which came out yesterday in Stratechery. He was on vacation, so it took him a little while to come out with this analysis. But he said, actually, I expected this. I think a lot of people did. And despite the Schadenfreude, the sinful pleasure in others' misfortune, this might be good news in the long run for Apple. He said, I believe Apple's management made three critical errors in their forecast for this last quarter. He wrote this up, actually, some months ago, that were predictable precisely because they'd made the same errors before, errors I wrote about at that time. In other words, I'm very much susceptible to confirmation bias as well. We all expected it, so we got it. If I am right, that's good news for Apple. The company's in better shape than the last week of hysteria suggests. So Tim blamed China. He said the strong dollar meant that, of course, the exchange rate was against their China's favor, that the Chinese economy had been slumping. And he said over 100% of our year-to-year revenue decline occurred in Greater China. Now, Greater China, I found out, is not just China. It's also Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Singapore. So they didn't sell as well in China. But remember, this was the strategy to compensate for dropping sales in general, right? We're going to make it up in China. So right. they didn't make it up in China.
Yeah. Basically.
Right. I mean, this is the bottom line is that it bottomed out in other parts of the world already. And yeah. the growth that they saw over the last couple of years was as they moved into the Chinese market, they became more and more dependent on that for growth, not for overall sales. I mean, there's still a large number of people who are buying iPhones, obviously.
Yeah, they're still going to make $84 billion
in
3 months.
I mean, remember, a couple years ago, they did $76 billion, and that was the biggest quarter right. ever.
Right.
You know, and so the $84 billion is not necessarily a huge disappointment.
Does it, Andy, mean that the iPhone is not, though, as successful as it should be or we expected it?
Certainly, if they were expecting to break the piggy bank in China, that's something that that was a plan I never really understood. I wouldn't have gone so far as to say that it was wrong, simply that I didn't understand it, given that in China, Apple's been so lax over there that other services and other phones had a chance to already become sort of the iPhone of China. There's really no opportunity for Apple to say, hey, look at our entire ecosystem. Look how wonderful our network of services are. Look how wonderful our network of software is. Because China developed all kind of in its own sort of walled-in garden of its own, Apple couldn't build its own walled-in garden inside its walled-in garden. And the third thing is that my perception of Apple in China is that it really is more of a fashion brand than it is here in the United States. A lot of people with just cause continue to support Apple products because they say it's really well built, they'll last a long time, they're very well supported. I think that in China, and in the United States, it's also like the fashion brand. You really want to be able to flash that Apple logo. Whereas in China, you can buy one of the reasons why there's such a good market for knockoff phones is that people care about having that logo on the back of the phone. It doesn't matter to them that once they drill down past the top layer of the interface, it's actually an Android phone. Just like a lot of people, they don't care if they don't have a real Louis Vuitton bag, as long as they have a well-made bag that has that Louis Vuitton styling and the Louis Vuitton logo on it. So that's why I never understood the idea that Apple's going to crack this big, giant piggy bank full of cash that is China. And then we don't even get into the problems of what kind of controls is China going to continue to exert over a company like Apple, and what kind of effect are the trade wars going to have in trying to get products into that market to begin with. So I think that Apple has larger problems around the iPhone. Like you said, I think they've had a great they still are very, very profitable. There's no problem with them continuing to exist. But if there's a good thing that comes from this, is that maybe a lot of people outside of Apple will reflect upon the fact that Apple is mortal, and that it is not a natural thing for a company to keep having a better quarter year after year after year after year, that it's okay to simply be profitable and to have their money in a lot of different businesses. And that's what Apple's going to be like in 5 or 10 years. So at some point, the iPhone is going to be a nice part of their portfolio, but the joy is going to be over for the iPhone as being their big, huge wedge of profitability every year.
Micah,
we've seen that too.
What are the lessons for Apple in this? I mean,
well, so it's interesting to me, I think, because we've already seen, I think that maybe Apple wasn't ready quite yet to do this whole, now we got to be worried about this thing and here's what's going on. But if, you know, I transcribe the earnings calls every time they come around. And so I've had a chance to listen to all for a while now, the way that they report these things and what they talk about. And Apple has been, and you know, this is not new information. Apple has been saying services for so long now. And it is clear that they have been sort of like wink, wink, hint, hint, beating around the bush saying, hey, pay attention to these other companies that are within our company. And, you know, you've got iPhone, that's great, but we're going to stop reporting unit sales and unit numbers, and we are going to sort of back away from that. And by the way, did you hear about services and also these other devices that we're selling? I think that, you know, if there's a lesson for Apple to learn, it's kind of what Bloomberg said. Apple's iPhone warning comes years too late. I think for some reason the financial industry needs some like handholding and maybe did not realize that this had to happen. But it's just as Andy said, it's obvious that at some point we were going to hit this thing, and it's clear, I think, that Apple internally was planning for this and was saying, you know, we've got to start looking at these other ways to make money, like charging people for little amounts of storage. But, you know, that's an aside. And we've got to sort of diversify. But I think that they just didn't come to Apple's, or rather to, you know, the world and say, hey, get ready because the iPhone's about to drop. And what? I don't know if they predicted it.
And my guess is that this correction, I mean, I think that they probably saw it. They probably calculated that it was going to be in the spring or one of the next two quarters was going to be a contraction.
They did issue a guidance, though, that was well above what it ended up being.
No, no, what I'm saying is that I think that they didn't think it was going to happen this quarter. Sucks. I think that the reason they turned it off was we're going to have a great quarter. You know, because that was the holiday quarter.
It will be a record, like what Maestri said last time, and right, you wrote it down, Micah,
right,
that it was going to be a record
so
quarter
I think
this year.
My guess is that they expected it to be a record quarter. They figured this is the time. If you're going to shut off the iPhone numbers, shut them off when it was a record quarter. You know, and I think that they expected to have another quarter or two before it was going to be something that contracted. I think it's not that they didn't expect it to contract. It's not that I think they just didn't expect it to contract this quarter. And that was the, right, you know, I think that is the distinction. I bet you they were going to talk about more services, oddly enough. But I think that the interesting thing for Apple is that what Apple has cornered, I will argue, is 200 to 300 million people who are willing to pay a premium for things just to work, you know, and that is probably, I'm not talking about morals. I'm not talking about the way the world should work. From a business perspective, that's that's one of the most valuable groups of people. 200 to 300 million people willing to pay a little extra for everything to work is probably the most valuable client base you can have. And so I think that there is a huge opportunity for Apple to increase services, but also products. I think that one of the things that Apple hasn't done very well is expand. They've kind of taken the culture of Steve Jobs and just continued down it. And the problem is they don't have Steve anymore. So without Steve, you can't do that. You know, you have to now spread out and have things that are not the next big thing every single time. But the problem was is that Steve would look at one thing and focus on it and make it successful. And then he'd look at something else and that thing just disappeared for him. And he would just now look at this other thing and make that successful. And so what Apple needs to do now is pay attention to a bunch of things. For instance, I think that the home, the whole home automation process is moving very, very slowly. They're starting to show off, hey, we've got a doorbell, we've got a bunch of other things. Apple should have been building those products. I mean, they should have just, you know, it doesn't, you know, they should have just said, we're going to build the products for you. And if you other people want to build into the system, that's great. But we're going to make it, because I look at, like, I have 14 Sonuses at my house, right, that came with the house. When I bought the house, it had a bunch of them.
That's worth a lot of money.
So I was like, do these come with the house? And they're like, yeah, it came with the house. Yeah, I was like, I'll take it. Like, literally, there's speakers all through the whole house, and it's got these. But every time I do an update to my Wi-Fi, every time, like, I have to, like, go back and reset them all. There's, like, this huge process of updating the house's audio system every single time I do something, whereas my Apple HomePod just fixes, you know, and new Apple products, people come in with their iPhone. Kevin Hansen was at my house the other day, and he went to jump on the Wi-Fi, and it just pops up on my phone. Do you want to give him the Wi-Fi password? I was like,
yes,
sure.
I love that.
You know, and the thing is that
interesting you say that, because one of the things Thompson points out is that lock-in that Apple has here doesn't apply in China.
It may not.
Because a lot of the phones, a lot of the apps like WeChat, they use are cross-platform. So he says there's not nearly the penalty in China for moving to an Android device.
And I agree. And I think that there's two lessons that I hope Apple doesn't learn from this. One is that they should start opening up all their, you know, opening everything up. And I see that a little bit when they're starting to put, like, iTunes on Samsungs and everything else.
Why
and so
would you want that? I mean, isn't that
as an Apple user, I just want everything to work. I want everything to be tied together. I want a walled garden. I want it to work. I want it to look. I just want it to look. What that experience of someone comes to my house and I give my password. My HomePod works. Eventually my car works. My glasses work. Everything just ties together. There's no external protocols that have to be figured out.
The other option is that, but this will never happen. This is a foolish pipe dream. Is that everything's open and everything interoperates.
But when everything's
that's
open,
never going to happen.
And when everything is open, it's a mess. Look at Android.
Yeah.
You know, like, so
if everybody agreed on standards and adhered to it, but nobody will, because everybody wants their walled garden.
Fundamentally, every company wants to take an unused cost and commoditize it. And they want to take what makes them money and control it. And those things all mismatch between every company.
Right.
And that will destroy every open format ever.
Yeah.
And so Apple has this incredible power of they have the hardware, they have the OS, they have the products, and they can tie all those together. I think that there are 200 to 300 million people. And the question is can they get 200 to 300 million people to pay about $1,000 a year for different things that they can have their life work?
What they're doing with this new accounting is we're not going to look at units sold. We're going to look at revenue per customer.
And I wouldn't say, you know,
that's the number you should be looking at.
And I would say that the cynical way of looking at that is how do we squeeze the most out of the customer? But really, how do we provide a great experience for the people that are willing to pay for that? And there's a lot of them. I mean, it turns out that there's hundreds of millions of people that are willing to pay for that.
The possible lesson, I'm not saying this is true, but the possible lesson is that Apple might have seen what happens when they really have to compete like everybody else competes in a marketplace, that it doesn't actually work out as well as they would like it to work. That sometimes what I worry about Apple is that they're not being as strong or as competitive as they could be by wanting to be the toughest predator on a very, very isolated island with that nobody else can get into. And as soon as like one cat or one rat lands on that island, or as soon as a creature from that island tries to compete like with the rats in New York, they get killed really, really quickly because they have not learned skills that every other company has learned to deal with. For instance, how to embrace other people's technologies, how to embrace open standards, how to make something that works well with another thing or another system that you have no control over. It's not a toy. It is harder.
They used to do that when Microsoft
on the Android
was the dominant operating system. They used to do that, but they haven't had to do that in the last decade.
I just find that everything that's like an open standard that you have to tie to, you just end up with all this gobbledygook.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who's unfortunately the fact of it. You know, so I wish it weren't, because it would be better for everybody.
Right.
If things interoperated, but they don't, and they never will.
An example of the, you know, it only works if you provide enough of the solution. So Apple providing, you know, all the different pieces. And so when they don't provide, for instance, all the home products.
The downside of that is when Apple doesn't do it right, or they decide not to do something, you're out of luck. So there is no Sonos solution yet. There's a HomePod. So
no, I agree.
That's the downside to a closed market.
But I think
by the way, it's not just Apple. This chart from Bloomberg shows that, in fact, smartphone sales are declining across the board. Samsung took a loss, or you know, had a big drop too. So everybody's got to deal with this.
Everybody has a smartphone.
Right.
I mean, so many we have smartphones. I've seen it talked about how they're like appliances now, and we don't necessarily need to give them up.
Is Apple charging too much for its phones?
Not for the people who are like willing to buy the stupid iPhone XS Max that I have that I didn't need, that like even though I had an iPhone X and I upgraded to that.
We all bought one, right?
Yeah, we got one and they're happy with that. But I think that you know, in terms of price, and maybe like the lesson here, and I saw some folks talking about this too, the lesson here is that yes, there is finally that upper level of, okay, well, $1,500 is definitely the limit that folks are going to go. But I do think that we've reached a point where lots of people now have smartphones. And what is the, you know, for some people, the value prop is not getting a new smartphone that has a new, better screen. It's the fact that this phone that they have still works and it's just fine. And so it makes sense to me. I mean, it's like a solution. If you fill the water with salt, eventually the salt stops dissolving into the water because there's too much salt. And like now that we've hit this level where so many people have smartphones, they aren't necessarily needing to get rid of them. They aren't necessarily interested in upgrading, getting a better device. And so if there's nobody to buy the devices, then what do? You have to come up with new things. You have to come out with a subscription video service that can be not just on your own set-top box, but can be on other televisions. Because folks who already have those devices might want to then pay Apple to have their subscription video service or what have you. So like this is just very clearly, in my mind, we've reached the period where it's saturation to a certain extent. And I realize there are plenty of markets where we can expand, but it's like, it's clear that Apple now is going, okay, let's look at some other ways to make money, because we can't just keep growing when it makes no sense to do so, because people have the phones and they're fine with them. And then the battery thing too, you know, it doesn't cost a whole heck of a lot to get a new battery put into your old phone, so it lasts even longer. So no, I'm not going to buy a new iPhone XS Max. Well, I'm Micah, so I am, but you know what I mean? Someone else might not do that. It seems like we're getting to that point where this all just makes sense. A lot of people can't sell more smartphones because the smartphones are out there.
We should point out, not that the stock market is in any way a bellwether, but Apple's stock today is up 2.33%. People saw that as a buying opportunity for a stock that has been tumbling for 6 months. This is the peak was October 3rd at $232. It's down now to $151.30. So, but the interday, but today this stock is inclining up. Not that that means anything. I'm just. But if you're going to talk about market cap and
obviously
stock market,
I'm on the show and I don't have any Apple.
We don't
stock.
Have any Apple stock, so
but
we ain't got a dog in this.
But I
think there's also in China, there's a little bit of a backlash after the trade wars and the dissing of Huawei and ZTE from the United States, that it may be seen as unpatriotic to some people in China to buy an American phone.
It does seem like, well, companies have been telling
especially
their employees not to use it.
Especially because you've got great phones in China from Chinese manufacturers that are about half as much as an iPhone.
Right.
Also, we should point out that the Huawei staffer who tweeted Happy New Year from an iPhone has been demoted.
Yeah. Well, that's a pretty classic.
That's a
classic
different
error.
Thing. Yeah.
But I think it was seen a little bit as, you know, you're being unpatriotic. You're being disloyal. Anyway, that's a side story. But so Apple's lessons. Let's continue on, because I think a smart company is question number one. Is Tim Cook the wrong guy to lead Apple into this future. He was the right guy for the last 10 years.
I think that it's kind of one of those things like the offense, he's a different quarterback and the offense is still the same offense. And I think that's the problem, you know, for the football thing.
No, that's a good point.
But that they're still playing the same offense, which is one product at a time. When you have someone that's operational, I feel like they need to expand the number of products, not just services, but hardware. But expand the number of products that they're providing their consumers, because they have this limited group of consumers and that's going to grow slowly. And what they need to do now is to figure out how they serve them with more things that just work.
And I can tell that, Alex, you really want Apple to release some HomeKit products of their own, and I'm so for that world. I am 900,000% for that world. Please let that happen.
Yeah, and you just want everything. When you open it up, like when you open up a HomePod, it just It pulls a bunch of stuff and then it works.
People
and
have avoided HomeKit because it's hard to develop for. And for a while, you had to have some hardware, a specific chip.
And I think
you don't
Apple
have to do that anymore.
I think Apple should have kept it. I mean, from a security perspective, and I think that Apple has made the biggest thing that they have done well is this whole, now that privacy, the biggest risk for them is Australia, because if they start to really break into the hardware and de-encrypt stuff and put a back end in, that's a huge issue for Apple. But I think that otherwise the privacy, there is again a group of people who are willing to pay to know that all this hardware and all the services are all relatively tied up compared to all the other platforms. And I think that that's been the right choice for Apple. And especially when you're talking about homes, you're talking about your car, you're talking about, all those other things, you're going to want to have that privacy more than ever.
What do you think,
Something
Andy,
important.
Go ahead, well, Micah, then Andy.
Something really important about this, this HomeKit thing. Whenever Apple first released the new specification to where you could do HomeKit authentication via software instead of hardware, I did some super deep digging in trying to understand what it is. And that's because there was a common misconception out there that if a product did not have the hardware chip from Apple, then it meant that it was less secure because it was using software-based authentication. That is not actually the case. Whether you use the hardware chip or you use the software chip, Apple's requirements for the security and the authentication process is the same. What the hardware chip allowed people to do, companies who manufactured smart home products, was make that whole thing easier for them. Apple did require it. Yes, you had to have the chip. But what it did was you make your board and you connect all the stuff, the Wi-Fi thing, and it's all connected. And then you add that chip and it takes care of all of the processing. It does it, or rather authentication, and it does it in a low power way that was easier for folks who are making Bluetooth LE gadgets and Wi-Fi gadgets that were not connected to normal house power.
Was there resistance to that it was then an Apple-only product that couldn't work in other ecosystems?
So it made it difficult, obviously, because
people want to be Z-Wave, they want to be Zigbee, they want to work with other ecosystems, they want to work with Android. And if you'd put in a chip that makes it Apple-specific...
Oh, no.
That adds cost... And does it limit your choices?
It's cost. It's cost, but it doesn't make it so that it couldn't work with the Amazon Assistant. Yeah, you could still work with the Amazon Assistant. It's just it costs more. And for companies who had already been creating these products for so long, they're not going to redesign their chip and have to start all over to include Apple's authentication coprocessor. So when they came out with the software authentication option, it said, hey, you still have to do the exact same stuff. We've got to do, I can't remember all of the different things, but it's like doubly encrypted and this and that and the other. All of these different processes still have to happen, but we're letting you take care of that on your own now if you want to. You don't have to get this chip. And they still have to go and send the product to certain testing places that Apple has set up that they've said, okay, yeah, we give this an approval for doing the testing.
That also is expensive.
And that is expensive. Yeah. One thing that I do like about it, though, and this is about the privacy comment, is the fact that Apple, one of the requirements in order to have that Works with Apple HomeKit badge is that you have to be able to completely set up the smart home product using the home app for iOS. That means that there's no third party. You can't require them to use a third party app.
Yeah.
And then, they lose user accounts. They lose the chance to connect with you over the server and things like that. So companies weren't big on that.
Good for users, good for Apple. But these companies all want to have
bad
their
for those
app
companies.
On yeah.
Yeah.
So somebody in the chat room said, I thought this was a good question. Is Tim Cook Apple's Steve Ballmer? Ballmer at Microsoft
made it very well.
He made a lot of money. Microsoft was very successful, but not in the way that mattered in the long run under Steve Ballmer. Is Tim Cook that person? Andy, what do you think?
I don't think so. Probably just because of the culture inside of Apple. It's not the problem wasn't just Steve Ballmer. It was the culture inside of Microsoft, which was to really make everybody internally fight with each other as hard as possible, and not necessarily for the benefit of the company, but for the benefit of their own projects or their own units. So I don't think that at all. There is a, I suppose you could now ask a question: if the person who's business brain was formed out of the problems of how do we get components from where they are being made to where we need them to be manufactured into products, and how do we get these products shipped from A to B? That's what that's why he was brought into Apple, and that's one of the big things that he's been bringing to the company ever since. You could ask the question of, does he still have the right brain for a company that's going to have to transition into a business of electrons instead of just actual hardware? I don't think so, once again, because of the culture. Sometimes, however, if you really need to make a huge, huge, huge change, sometimes that really does come with a brand new person right at the top. Not because the other person is doing a bad job, but because this new person doesn't have any preconceptions over where the money comes from. I think that if one bad quarter and one letter and one all-employee communication from Tim Cook caused the stock price of Apple to go down that badly, imagine how badly replacing Tim Cook would be. I don't see any problems that Apple is having that is solved or helped by swapping in Tim Cook. We might see some new vice presidents come in. We might see a slight reorganization. We might see some projects move from one person's house to another house, but I don't think there are any problems that could be solved by moving Tim Cook into an emeritus position.
I also think that their next, quote unquote, next big projects have probably taken a little longer. We've seen the rumors of stops and starts, the glasses, the car. Those were things that would have, you know, been a big push, and they've had a lot more trouble getting those out the door than, at least that's the rumor, that then, you know, that they've taken longer to project because they're hard, you know. And so I think that I think we're going to see those things still come out. I think I think that they've got a good future, but I do think that Apple needs to expand what they do. I mean, there's ways for them to redefine how those, you know, how these markets work. I still think I'm going to say one thing that I've said a couple times, but I'm going to say it again, is that if you look at something like iBooks, I think iBooks was a big failure on Apple's part, partially because they just wanted to make a bookstore that was like Kindle. And well, they gave it a whole bunch of new tools, but didn't prove that how to use those new tools to make it really compelling. And they did the same thing they did with HomeKit, which is that they went to Pearson and they went to all these publishers and asked them to make iBooks. And of course, these guys, you know, couldn't think their way out of a box. And so so they just created the same book with a couple of moving videos, as opposed to redefining.
It was a bad business offer. It was a bad offer for Pearson.
I agree. It was a bad offer for Pearson. But Pearson, what they should have done is hired, you know, they should have built the first set of books, you know, that you know, and set the pace for how far you can push that technology, as opposed to going to an established group. In the same way that HomeKit is not good for a lot of the established folks, Apple should have innovated that area and then forced them to move forward. The iPhone, Apple couldn't have tried to persuade people to do something with with the iOS. By creating the phone, they forced the entire industry to move a certain direction. And I think that when they don't do that, it doesn't work because people can't see that far.
That's a consistent problem. When Apple keeps creating products that work great, so long as you buy a whole bunch of other Apple stuff, you are limiting your market to people who have already invested in Apple or already have an emotional level of faith in Apple. You have to create a product that lets people solve their own problems, that doesn't involve going to the Apple store. And once again, if I have one worry about Apple's ability as a company, is that what do you do when you have to build something that has to work with something else and you don't know what that something else is going to be? That's a really hard problem to solve, and most other companies have been dealing with that for the entire lives of the company, whereas Apple is, okay, we'll create our own messaging standard. Okay, well, we'll create our own connectivity standard. Okay, well, we'll create our own system, and they can create all kinds of our own publishing system, and they can promote all kinds of very, very rational arguments for why their system is better. But for someone who, because of their own preferences or because of their own budgets or because of other technical needs, they can't buy the iPad that's required to run this textbook, all these advantages, they can only be admired academically from a distance. So I really think that Apple has to figure out how to coexist in a larger world without making their products suffer as a consequence.
I just think that their ecosystem has to be large enough that it makes sense. I mean, you look at if we agree that 200 to 300 million people are willing to pay for that interconnectivity and everything else, I don't think Apple needs a market bigger than that. You know, I think that, you know, and they could literally, you know, the thing is that you keep on tying those folks in, because there's a lot of people out there, and admittedly, I mean, I have an Android phone, I have PCs, Linux, a whole bunch of other things, but the core of my life mostly revolves around a Mac experience, and I don't really. I just want it to work
for you, but there's no way Apple's going to say, "Oh yeah, stock market, we're not going to grow. We just got these 200 million people. We're going to be happy."
No, grow it, but I think that
They are saying services, which is about one of the few things.
But there's a lot of us that the kind of person buying the Apple phone is someone who's paying a lot of money for a lot of other things that Apple could encroach on. So the thing
is the stock market, though, want them to grow into new markets, new territories.
I'm saying they can.
Just by doing that.
But the thing is that's a group of people that have disposable income, that are paying for those margins, that are, I mean,
Apple says, no, we got to find new markets, and that's why they're looking at self-driving cars.
But I think
I agree. No, but I'm saying they're taking that 200 to 300 million people and leveraging it into new markets. I completely agree with you that that's what they need to do. I think that they need to grow into lots of new markets with that group of people, because there's a lot of things that we buy, you know, and I think that's the music has stopped. And if I was going to stop the music right now, I would want to be the company making 30% margins, not companies that are making 1% margin.
Yeah, 38% is what they're making.
Yep.
Go ahead, Micah.
You hit the point at the end there. I was going to say, you know, while Apple is expanding into other markets, those of us who are happily within Apple camp will be okay. They, you know what I mean? Like they're still going to keep, you know, doing those things for us. It just means that they're expanding. And then Alex, you ended up saying, yeah, they're leveraging us who are here and happily in Apple land to expand. So yeah, we got there. We got there in the end.
Yeah, but it's tough because I agree that would be a reasonable business, but it's not the way the world works. The markets want to see them expand into new markets and grow and get new consumers, not just at Twitter. Twitter's been stuck at the same.
But I think that you don't need to double the number of users every year. I think that
you can, you know, obviously.
No, but I'm saying, but if you have a bunch of the problem
there
is
aren't enough people in the world.
The privacy issues and the privacy issues, the fragmentation issues, right. All those things are going to continue to have certain groups of people go, more and more people saying, I'd rather just have it work.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd rather have just this go away. And so it's not that you're limiting it to that's all you're going to have for the next 10 years. It's just that, you know, you focus on making sure that experience is great. It's still a really good business in the meantime. I don't, you know, the problem with Microsoft is, yeah, sure, Microsoft had a problem and an existential issue, but they also had, you know, low grade hardware and you know, low margin everything.
It's not comparison. I agree.
You know, the thing is, yeah, they had a problem and they had a problem with a bunch of people that were cheap.
And they pivoted.
It's different. Yeah. And they pivoted very successfully.
I think one other problem is just that the nature of technology is, or actually manufacturing, is that eventually the first ones cost a hell of a lot of money to make, and because they're going to be expensive to begin with, you're only selling them to luxury buyers, which means that you build this car with a luxury coach on top of it with space for a driver and a working fireplace in the enclosed back seat. But eventually, you figure out how to engineer it and how to manufacture it so it becomes affordable to everybody, and that's when it really really becomes a problem if you built your entire brand around luxury. So, and that's what's happening with phones as well, that this used to be this thing that couldn't possibly be made for anything less, sold for anything less than $600 or $700 or $800. And now what would have been an $800 phone 2 or 3 years ago is now $450, maybe $500. And that's where it's going to go. It's going to go to the level where it's a really, really good phone with lots of features that people actually need, is at a price where manufacturers can make a decent profit from it, or at least as part of the service that they're selling. And then people who are building their entire businesses out of expecting people to spend $800 for a phone are going to need to figure out the next step. And it doesn't look like making an even better $1,200 phone is the most natural next step. So
I think that the calculation Apple made is, I think that they put out cheap phones and not very many people bought them. I think that they, their market, I think that
weren't that cheap.
No, well, but what I'm saying is that when they put the iPhone, whatever it was, the C or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
I bet you internally that the numbers were not.
And the SE.
You know,
SE did pretty well.
They did okay, but they didn't do as well as the higher end ones. And so I think that is part of the indicator, is that Apple's market's not there, as in the same way, and I think that, I do think though that, those people aren't going to buy more phones, but they might buy more cars. They might be interested in AR. They might be interested in more HomeKit things. They might be interested in other services. And so there's a lot of other places that Apple, because there's lots of things when I look at it, like, this is, my microwave is stupid. I would love to buy an Apple microwave.
Oh, jeez.
They just worked. It talked to my phone, and when I plugged it in, it just connected to the Wi-Fi, and I don't have to think about it anymore.
Honestly, I'm with you. I'm so with you on this stuff.
Okay, but that's,
I know that, no one's going to buy it except for you and I, but that's,
it's
I,
not.
Just
it's
let
not.
Me have it.
But you just illustrated another problem, that most people, they have a microwave because they want to heat up a cup of coffee in the morning. And when they come home like drunk with a foil container of takeout, they want to be able to reheat it for breakfast the next day. And okay, in the CES demo video, they love the fact that, oh, look, it can talk to my phone, and look, it has a camera built in, so it can automatically figure that, oh, that's Mugu Gai Pan. I know how to reheat this. But really, as soon as you do a reliable job of heating a cup of coffee in the morning, reheating leftovers from last night, people do not figure out how to spend the extra, why to spend the extra $200. And for a lot of Apple products, that's what they're dealing with.
The question isn't most. Most is a horrible idea. Most people, what most people want is going to be that's just a lowest common denominator, drop to the ground, not worth even doing as a business.
Not necessarily.
What you should look at is you define the market.
McDonald's is doing okay,
You define your market. They're actually not.
Palm OS. Remember, Palm kicked Newton's butt because Apple made a conceptual device, whereas Palm said, what if we made it so you can actually stick it in a shirt pocket? And what if we actually gave you a developer kit in the box so that people could write software without spending $900 for a developer kit? Sometimes you have to, it's not necessarily making the cheapest, shoddiest thing. It's about, what do people actually want? What are people asking us to make? And part of your business should be making that thing.
Define your market. Define it big enough to support what you need to do, and then serve that market really well. And I think that's not most. That can be 5% of the market. That can be 10% of the market. That can be 2% of the market. If your margins are good enough. I mean, 200 or 300 million people is only, a couple percentage points of the total population of the world. And that's all you need to make that work. Yeah. I mean, maybe you want to grow that to 500 million, but that's still a very small percentage of the world, and you don't need to serve most.
You're absolutely right. The people forget, I too sometimes forget, that Apple's only need is to make money year after year after year, and they get to stay in business. They get to keep doing what they want to do, which is the only marker of a successful business: the ability to keep doing what you want to do. The thing that I would add, though, is that if artists and creators didn't continue to evolve, they turn into like the Beach Boys, where you only go to a Beach Boys concert and they will play only the same hits you've heard a million times before, and who cares? You have to be in a position, if you are truly an artist, if you're truly a creator, you have to get your fans kind of angry with you from time to time, and you have to drop old fans and get new fans from time to time. So that's the thing that I want Apple to be able to do from time to time, is to say that this is absolutely not an Apple product. Isn't that wonderful?
Well, and I think that they should still embrace those things. I just think that when you talk about standards and supporting standards, you know, I'm always reminded of the saying that none of us are as dumb as all of us, you know, and when you start getting to all these, you know, these design by committees, which I've been in many of those meetings, it's just like it just gets ground into something really stupid, you know, you started with a great idea. And you end up with something that is just ground chuck. And so I think that Apple has the opportunity to continue to do great things and make great things.
And you think Tim Cook's the guy to do that?
I think if they change the offense to a wider range of products, a wider range of services,
think there needs to be.
No, I think that there are plenty of markets that Apple can move into that are almost obvious.
So that's the old Apple, the visionary-driven Apple.
You a visionary one product at a time?
Yeah.
That's a different kind of offense. And they need to widen that offense out.
Micah, you agree?
I kind of do, because I think that right now we're seeing so many companies, you know, these big companies, the Googles and the Apples and others, Samsungs, are all sort of working pretty closely. I mean, the phones all look alike. Yeah. These different devices all look alike. All of the tower devices with voice assistants inside all look alike. And so it's not as if there's much of an opportunity to step out and come out with something new. I mean, what was it? The Essential Phone was like trying to do something new at the time.
Sad story there. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think more what we need is, let's look at these markets that are out here and let's figure out how to move into them and dominate them. And there's a little bit of future looking stuff, but right now we've got several companies all thinking about augmented reality and virtual reality in the future there. And so it doesn't necessarily, I don't know that the technology is far enough along, like in life, to where we can have a company that says, let's put iTunes and the internet and, you know, a phone all together and make it into it, because everybody's doing it.
I think Steve Jobs was interested in changing the world. I don't think it's very, I mean, to become the, I don't know what, the Mont Blanc, the Louis Vuitton of the computer world is not a particularly inspiring or interesting thing. It might be good for profitability, but I think that Apple's heritage is to change the world, to make the world a better place.
I think that they still can do that, and I think it's easier if they don't try to water down what they're doing.
Agree. I mean, nobody watered down Steve Jobs' vision.
Right.
Nobody
and
dared.
I think they're doing it in a different way with their smart. And like when we talk about changing the world, there's changing the world in the sense that, oh, look at this cool as hell thing I just made.
Yeah.
And it's going to be so great for you. And then we talk about changing the world, like new environmental initiatives and figuring out how to recycle old products. Those are incredible things that one can only do when they are this
Apple do that, but these products, I mean, the only good news about Apple's lack of iPhone sales is there'll be fewer iPhones in the landfill in years going ahead. Apple's not exactly the greenest. Despite Liam, the Apple iPhone deconstructing robot, I don't think Apple's recycling record is all that good. They make these are disposable products. They're not designed to be.
Man, I use them for a long time. Almost every phone I've bought.
That's your mistake. You're supposed to buy a new one every year.
Well, I do, but then someone else ends up with them. Someone else in the company ends up with my phone.
That's true.
Or someone else
that's
up. True. Someone else. They recycle my kids.
That way,
my kids are using older phones.
Yeah.
You know, without.
So you're the reason that they didn't make any money, because you didn't get all the kids new phones. That's what's going on.
Your fault, Alex.
They're stuck with sixes.
It's not China's fault. It's your fault.
Yep. It's
Let's
my
take
fault.
A little break. There's more to talk about, including Apple's presence. I put that in quotes at CES. But first, a word from Slack. This is how we communicate. I have Slack running all the time on my phone, on my desktop, because when anybody needs something from me or from anybody in the office, it's in Slack. Slack is the tool we use to keep the right people in the team in the loop, to get the information out to everybody on the team, Teamwork on Slack happens in channels. It's so much better than email. It lets you organize conversations and information around, in our case, shows and projects, business ideas, offices, teams, and everything you need to get to work is in one place. So it's faster and easier to get things done. And they don't say this in their ads, but honestly, the reason Slack has dominated the world is because it's fun. It looks great. It works. It gets the job done. But people like to use it. When we moved to Slack, everybody was happy in the office.
When we started using it, we've been using Slack for years, years and years. And one of the producers got it, and I was like, "What is this? Like, why aren't we just using email?" And it was like one of those things. Like, I very slowly, and then suddenly the whole company was using it. And then before I knew it, I was using it. And then it got to a point where I was saying, "You know, like people send me an email," and I was like, "Why are you emailing me this? This is a Slack conversation."
Yeah. Reduce emails. Streamline your team's conversations. Slack connects, by the way, one of the reasons we use Slack is because it integrates all the tools we need are automatically built into there. So the engineering Slack, they've got stuff from Ops Genie and all the other things pumped into there. Slack allows you to organize your team with real-time messaging or video or voice calls, group file sharing. Yes, we integrate it into our Google Drive because that's where we put our files. Searchable archives. It's all easy right there. Centered in that app on your desktop, on your phone. It saves you time and improves productivity. You don't have to have multiple tabs and multiple apps open to keep updated with work. It works with Jira. It works with Salesforce. It works with Zendesk. It works with, as I said, Google Drive and 1,000 more apps integrated right into Slack. And people just love to use it. There is something magical. And there's only been, you know, every year there's only one or two apps or programs that are just, there's something about them where you go, Fortnite's an example, where it just took over because there was something about it everybody wanted to use. Slack is like that. It's one of those unicorn apps where just everybody wants to use it. I found out after we moved to Slack that Jason and Megan had a secret Slack channel that they were using to do Tech News Weekly. An unapproved. So now they're on the Slack channel. With Slack, your team is better connected. Learn more at slack.com, S-L-A-C-K, slack.com. We thank Slack for doing such an amazing job where work happens. So Apple doesn't have a booth at CES. Have they ever had a booth? They haven't in a long time had a booth at CES. But they are there, as CNET says, in the snarkiest way possible. The big ad on the side of the Spring Hill Suites, that's a Marriott right next to the convention center, says, "What happens on your iPhone stays on your iPhone, apple.com/privacy.
So long as you're not in China or any of the other countries where Apple says, "Hey, government, who wants to turn an iPhone into a yoke of
yoke?" I don't think so. I think that actually
Apple's not. I'm personal opinion only. I don't think Apple is allowed to take a victory lap like that until they have some statement that says that there are limits to what we will allow a government to do to its own people through our phones.
Well, I have not heard that right yet. I believe what they've given China is access to iCloud, which they do in the United States as well, not to the phone. But I'm sure that's why that billboard is very specific to the phone, is because they're not giving access to the phone. They're giving access to the cloud.
Unless you put a third-party app on the phone that exfiltrates all your information to Facebook.
Yeah. I mean, that's... Right.
From the point of view of a consumer, as soon as you start using your phone, it's not Apple's fault, but it shouldn't... And you shouldn't pretend that phone is, you know, isolated from the rest of the world. There's plenty of other stuff on there. It's given away the store, including, by the way, Google's own apps, as well as Facebook, right? They're not more private on an iPhone than they are on an Android phone.
Well, they are. It depends on what apps you use. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I've taken, by the way, most of those apps off my phone.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I just took them off. And the thing is it wasn't for privacy is great. It was mostly for a calm mind. So I find that taking most of the social networks, only using them when I'm on a desktop, which is becoming less, as you can see in front of me, less and less.
Michael Simon and Macworld also points out that billboard is on the side of a Marriott.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Oops. I love it.
Good catch, Michael. Yeah. So, but I think, you know, certainly every security guru I know says I would never use an Android phone. I would only use an iPhone. So, it is encrypted. It's encrypted by default. So far, they've managed to hold the line against law enforcement. Even in China, I don't think the Chinese government can get into the phone.
And I think, their greatest danger is not China, it's Australia. And really the Five Eyes.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit about that in case folks don't know the Australia thing? Because this is news to me. I don't know what you're talking about.
Australia's passed a law. I don't know if it's gotten through all of it, but basically.
It's not in effect yet, but it has passed.
It has passed that theoretically could give them the ability to force Apple to open up a phone. Now, this is not, in my opinion, this is not Australia. This is the United States. So the United States is part of a consortium between United States, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, and the UK, generally known as the Five Eyes.
Yeah.
So what the United States wants is they want into the phone, and what Australia is a quiet place where they don't get so many complaints. So the if you do it when they try to do it in the United States, they get all kinds of letters to the people's congressmen, and then it's not fun anymore. When they do it in Australia, it just passes right through. Because they don't get the same resistance. But it's basically a backdoor that once Apple opens it to Australia, or if they're forced by Australian authorities to open that phone, of course, what's going to happen is the United States is going to come in behind it. China is going to come in behind it. And the problem with all of this, with all of the let us into your phone and it's for law enforcement, is we just always have to remember. I agree that getting valid terrorist information and so on and so forth is important. But we have to remember that the NSA cannot even keep track of their own secrets. You know, this is not, like when they lose what they lost to Snowden, what they lost in Germany, they cannot even hold on to things that they know are important. So if they can't hold on to their own secrets, how are they going to hold on to a bunch of people they don't even know? And the answer is they're not going to. So opening this up is not a matter of whether it's right or wrong. It's a matter of the ability to keep it confidential and the inability of our most secret agency. Well, not really, but almost most secret agency, of their inability to actually protect themselves means they're not going to protect us.
Wow.
Yeah. And the other problem is that it's one of those really poorly written laws that simply says that law enforcement can compel a company to unlock a phone, and without saying, well, what if it's impossible? Well, that's your problem. We have the ability to compel you to do that. Also, if Apple has, let's say, a employee in Australia. If they have an employee in Australia, the fact that this Apple employee is in Australia means that they can be compelled by the government to unlock a phone and also held onto a secrecy binding, which means that they can't. Which means that not only are they not allowed to tell the public or the person whose phone has been affected, but they can also be compelled to say, "Unlock this phone and don't tell Apple that you've done this or your bosses that you've done this." That's how poorly written this law is. But I still say that that's something that's kind of a little bit above the waterline. It's when you get into problems like Apple has to remove the Taiwanese flag from the emoji library on the iPhone because Taiwan does not exist inside China. And this is, and they went ahead and they did that. And so what happens if they say that their keyboard cannot be allowed to post pictures of Winnie the Pooh because we feel as though that is derogatory against the party?
I think Apple has a core of what they're willing to protect and what they're not willing to protect, and I think that we can see what that looks like. I'm just always surprised when I looked at the Australian thing. I'm just like, you're Australians. Yeah. How can you be lackeys for the United States? And you're like you're Australians. You have a different level of expectation of them to be rebels and for them to push back, and instead they've just done what the United States wanted them to do.
Yeah.
Wow.
We'll see what the upshot of that is. That was passed in December. Quick pre-recess legislation that nobody really took a look at. And we've been talking about it since it passed in December. But
it's a big mess.
It is kind of.
But it's probably, I still think that is Apple's number one, because so much of their world is wrapped around privacy that opening that up.
It's a good thing for them to push. And I want to see those ads because it forces them to step up. If it's not just marketing, you got to step up. In fact, I think Microsoft, we were talking on Windows Weekly last Wednesday, Microsoft has an opportunity here to back down on some of the spyware that they put on their systems and step up and say, we're also a privacy company. The two companies that can't are Google and Amazon and Facebook, three companies that can't. And so it's important that companies that can, because their business model is different, do, I think.
And I have to admit, this has been a shift for me. I for a long time, I was like, ah, you can't be private. I mean, privacy is a useless thing to try to be, because there's too much out there. There's too much data. And I've kind of gotten to the point where I'm nearly a one issue voter about it at this point. You know, like I almost feel like when we go into 2020, I want to hear if a candidate says I'm willing to break into someone's phone, there is nothing else they can say that would allow me to vote for them.
Tough.
Nothing to come out of their mouth.
Because in general, I think when you phrase it, well, we want to catch bad guys and terrorists, so we need to get access to their phones. They can't be able to communicate privately. Most people in America hearing that sentence will say, yeah, you're right.
We have so much data.
I know.
So much data.
I know. I mean, I think we understand why that's not doable without compromising all of us.
And to be clear,
I don't know if that message is gotten out.
I don't have a problem with metadata and who we called and, you know, all that stuff. I think
that's pretty valuable too.
It is valuable, but I think that there's a valid reason for that.
Somewhere.
But you draw the line. Like that is the line where I say, yeah, because I'm not going to talk about it. We had to got TV back one time because of that. So, but I understand how that works, and I understand why it's important. And I think that there's a lower limit to when that's okay. And I think the metadata is fine. And I understand why the NSA wants to get all of it all the time, because you want to be able to rewind 10 years back to see before that guy thought about being a terrorist, who was he talking to? And so that all makes sense to me. But I think that we have to say there's an enclave that is our phone and the data that's on it, that that the government doesn't get to be part of. Yeah.
Especially because so many folks use, you know, our brains are not meant to be storage devices. They're meant to be processing devices. They're not meant to be storage devices. And, you know, there are plenty of psychological studies that talk about how by trying to bog down our brain with a bunch of things to remember, it's not good for us. And so oftentimes people use tools to keep those things instead of trying to have their brain remember everything. And so in that sense, our devices become these tools that store our thoughts and our memories and our relationships and our interactions and so much of who we are, in a way, because, you know, at the end of the day, what is a person but their memories and their experiences and things like that. And so essentially, when you look at this tool that you use to exist as a human and reach out to other people and live, for a government to request full and complete access to that, how is that much different than asking for full and complete access to me as an individual? And that's, I was the same way. I used to be very kind of like, meh, well, we're online. I guess I don't really have a reasonable right to privacy. But it was actually Georgia Dow who sort of kind of swayed me a little bit, because she's very staunch privacy advocate. And, you know, when I started to think about it, and particularly from that psychological aspect, it changed the way that I feel about this. Because, yeah, I mean, you can learn a lot about who I am by getting access to this device. And then there's also just the fact that it's kind of lazy of the NSA to just say, oh, can we just have everything? That's going to make it so much easier for us. You know, I mean, we could figure out exactly what it is we're looking for and then request just those things. But why don't you just give us a key so we can get in and get everything? And well, if something ends up leaking, oh, well. We've already got enough of that oh well stuff with Marriott and the credit reporting agencies and all of these other places that leak all the time and get little slaps on the wrist. It needs to be locked up a lot better.
There need to be consequences. We need to have some sort of a bill of rights, simply. So the reason why all these things keep happening is that all you have to do if you lose the data of millions and millions of people is say,
yeah.
You don't have to, I mean, you just say, oh, gosh, isn't that horrible? Well, here's a press release for you at 7 p.m. on a Friday.
And we're going to give you a year's free credit monitoring. Just because.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have, there are consequences if you there are consequences for dumping poison into a water supply, and it's not oops, our bad. Everybody have a free voucher for pizza. It's no, there are supposed to be actual punishments, and right now we've been experimenting with lack of regulation, and now it's not really working out for us. So now we need to regulate control of data.
Apple also had some CES presence with some briefings. Now, I know that Rene Ritchie is not here. He's at CES. That's why Micah Sargent is here. And at first I thought, oh, that means he's not meeting with Apple. Well, maybe he is, because Apple showed off a bunch of HomeKit stuff at CES.
I find this interesting.
Yeah.
That Apple, because I don't know. The way that Apple's sort of putting this forth, or rather that TechCrunch was talking about this, is Apple saying, hey, come check out these companies. And it's just a little weird to me, because it kind of reminds me of, what is it, the LG monitor that works with the newer MacBooks.
Right.
Where there's like a close partnership. The fact is, Apple, although externally was not super bullish about the HomeKit software authentication stuff that I was talking about earlier, certainly within the company, they were very excited about it. It's one of those things that's difficult to sort of make a temple feature and explain to everyday consumers what exactly that means. And so I think that is a lot of what this is, because Belkin's Waymo line is one of the main lines. Oh yeah, Waymo. Yeah. Thank you. One of the main lines that is, using that software authentication. And at the beginning, a lot of folks were very into these Waymo gadgets and liked what Belkin was offering, but it didn't work with HomeKit. And then there for a while, you could buy a bridge that gave you HomeKit compatibility. And then later on, they're like, oh, now we can just do software authentication. And I know a lot of people really do like their Waymo stuff. And so I think
be backwards compatible? In other words, if I have older Waymo switches, will they now work with HomeKit?
I cannot answer that. I'm not certain. Yeah.
Or do I have to get new ones? That's one advantage of a software-only fix, is that maybe you can upgrade the old ones. We'll find out. Eve announced a smart light strip and smart power strip. Connect Sense, a new smart outlet.
Can I just say, Connect Sense, you got to do better. I'm sorry. But those Connect Sense plugs are just, they're ugly. Yeah. they're like Fisher Price toys. So yeah. I'm sorry.
I have an iDevices outdoor plug that I use for my Christmas lights. That's ugly too. But I did love it that I could not only set it up with HomeKit, but it then told me my power consumption of my Christmas lights, which was not good. I was really like, what? It was expensive. It was like $8 a day for my Christmas lights. I thought, these are LEDs. Why is that cost me? Quickset is expanding. You know, they do locks. Their line of touchscreen smart locks. Is that a good idea, really? With a new model that describes as more contemporary and sleek. Miton launching an Avia smart lock in May. Particularly secure locks. By the UK Police's Secured by Design initiative. The Nano Leafs, which a lot of people have, including Stacey Higginbotham. The Nano Leaf Canvas will be now HomeKit enabled. NetAtmo is doing a smart video doorbell that will be HomeKit enabled.
That one is cool because so many companies that produce these cameras, they make you pay a subscription service to store your video in their cloud.
Right.
And so privacy. This is awesome because you can store it locally on an SD card and be able to access that stuff without ever signing up for some online thing. So not only are you not paying, but you're not also relying on the company to produce or to keep your video safe.
I think that's a trend because Wyzecam, which I think just took a big investment, a VC investment, WYZE, also does not require an internet connection. You can look at it on your phone, but you don't have to pay a monthly fee, and they have a little SD card. I think that's really cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so Apple is at CES, but it's kind of HomeKit stuff. Apple apparently in discussions to support RCS. This is a Google initiative. Well, I shouldn't say that, but Google's been the one pushing it. The rich communication service that will be replacing SMS text messaging on some phones with some carriers. It would be, you know, if at least in the U.S., if Apple doesn't support something like this, it's a non-starter. Because half the smartphones.
Well, the question is, are they going to support it? As in, they're going to tie it in with iMessages, or are they going to support it in? Yeah, you can talk to it. you can send things. I think that's all they're going to do. Because
so that's how it works now with SMS. There's a gateway,
right?
And if somebody dares not have an iPhone, well, there'll be a little green bubble.
Oh my gosh!
Those green bubble memes.
Oh, don't be a green bubble. My son was the first to tell me about green bubbles. I said. In his frat, I said, are there anybody with Android phones? He says, there's one guy.
And he hears about it constantly.
He's a green bubble. He doesn't get to any of the group messaging. He doesn't get to any of the group events. This poor guy. Talk about peer pressure. Talk about a lock-in on the walled garden. If you don't get invited to parties, and you're
it's
college,
like a dating
man.
Thing too, Leo.
Do you get less dates?
I've had some of my friends very seriously. I know that it's going to sound like I'm joking, but I have had some of my friends very seriously say, oh, yeah, things were going well, and then they were a green bubble.
Oh, burn. Burn. Well, RCS, so, probably they'll figure out a new color.
That's a proud, proud data point for Apple to say that, you know, I'm glad that we've provided a new vector for people to irrationally prejudge somebody and dismiss their entire worth based on a simple consumer choice that they made. Where's the billboard for don't be ostracized? Get in with the pack.
Yeah, go with the peer pressure. If we could do anything to pressure Apple into supporting RCS, I'd like to do that. Same thing with progressive web apps, PWA, which Apple's been a little slow to the table on. You know, this is that lock-in. There's no incentive for them to play in anybody else's garden. Just, you know, it works better if you're all Apple.
Mm-hmm. They also like to control their own destiny.
But as a user, it works better for me. I get the progressive web apps, and they're cute, but the thing is that they're never. I people argue with me all the time about this. Eventually, they're going to replace the. And I was like, they're never going to be as good as a native app, ever. You know, like they're never going to be as good as a native app, and it is.
Well, it depends what you mean by as good as.
Yeah, I mean, progressive apps are good for the developer, not good for the user.
Right.
Okay.
I think it depends on the app. I think it is going to be an issue because Apple's not doing a very good job of supporting it, and I don't think they ever will. And that's going to make it very hard for PWAs to succeed, even though both Microsoft and Google are 100% behind it.
I just want them to support RCS because every time a holiday comes around, I've got the one family member who sends out a message to every single person wishing them a happy Earth Day. And then I've got seven new people texting me whose numbers I don't have. It's a nightmare. So just if RCS saves me from that, I please do that, Apple.
Meanwhile, the Qualcomm wars continue. Apple has... One, in some regards, apparently the FTC is now going after Qualcomm for not allowing FRAND licensing of some of their patents. On the other hand, in Germany, iPhones are getting banned. In fact, Qualcomm's put aside $1.5 billion in funds in escrow so that the ban on iPhones, some iPhones, not all iPhones, but the ban on some iPhones can proceed in Germany. The newer iPhones, the XS... and 10R are not affected, but iPhone 7 and 8 sales have been halted. It seems to be an iOS 12 versus an iOS 11 thing. Like anything that came with iOS 12 is not, I don't understand it myself. In fact, 12.1.2 addresses some of the concerns Qualcomm had in China. So the battle goes on. It rages on with some victories on each side. Of all of Apple's devices introduced in the last 4 years, 78% are running iOS 12 now. That is pretty impressive.
Well, I think it's amazing that 95% are running the last two OSs. Like that is just a crazy
number.
That's
amazing. Yeah, only 5% are pre iOS 11, and probably it's because they can't run iOS 11. Right.
I will say that Apple, the updates, you just are constantly barraged if you don't
update.
You know, it definitely
that's one of the reasons, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, let's take a little. I'll tell you what. Do we want to do? It's too early to do the picks. Let me. Well, maybe not. Let me do a couple more stories, and we'll do the picks of the week. Apple. This is interesting. AirPlay 2 getting wide support at CES. Apple's going to launch an iTunes video app on Samsung smart TVs this spring. And we've seen Samsung and LG and others announce smart TVs with AirPlay 2 built in. So this is an example of you don't have to have a HomePod. This is open. This is good.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, as long as it's
services. services.
But there's still a lot of questions about it. Like, if again, Apple, the billboard about how we respect privacy company, Samsung's press release doesn't talk about what kind of data will or will not be harvested through this app. It's there. What kind of service is going to be used for payments to this app? We're going to assume that's going to be whatever Samsung-based payment service is going to be is supported by the infrastructure of their TV app architecture. It's a lot to think about. But yeah, if Apple really is serious, and obviously they are, about creating a video service, they're not going to make it just by selling it to people who own Apple TVs and people who have iPads and Apple products. People who don't necessarily spend $1,200 on a phone also watch television, and perhaps you want to be able to make that deployable elsewhere. So right now, the only place that you could be able to watch the content you've bought and paid for on iTunes is through the Windows version of the iTunes app. You can't get it through Android. You can't get it through any other set-top box. So I'm keen to see how quickly or if Apple rolls out new versions of this special app onto other platforms. It'd be great to see it for Android TV. I'm sure we'll see it for Roku and even Amazon Fire TV sticks before we see it on Android TV. But This is the first. It's a good move for anybody who has spent more than $8 on iTunes content. It's
bad though, if you want to sell more Apple TVs, right?
I mean, do they even care?
Maybe they don't. Apparently, they don't.
I know for me, I've just gotten to the point with my little tinfoil hat is that my TVs are not allowed to talk to the internet. Like I'm not, you know, like I'm just oh, you know, like they're not like I oh, like man. I have.
But you
I
can just, talk to your TVs because these Samsung TVs has Bixby built.
No,
in.
But I have. The TVs all have either some version, some
Do
of the
you
last
really?
Three
you
versions
get them
of Apple
off the
TVs.
Internet.
They're all on Apple TVs. They're
oh,
so
I see.
All of my services sit on an Apple TV, and then the Apple TV has an HDMI connection to the to the TV, and then I have all you know because I'm
that's
a cord
actually
cutter,
probably a good idea.
And I just keep
and
it
each
all
television
my
is
TV.
Wrapped in a Faraday cage.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's a Faraday cage with an Apple logo.
There you go. Apple branded Faraday cage.
But I think that there was just, I just have too many. I just don't think that, I think that they are playing as wild and loose, if not more wild and loose than a lot of the technology companies with those TVs. They're not tying them up. They're not closing them up because no one's asking them to and yep. No one's requiring them to. And I'm not, until they figure it out, I'm just going to let them, you know, just keep them as a dumb monitor system.
No.
It works fine for me.
I agree.
Our show today brought to you hold that thought. Brought to you by WordPress.com, the best place to make your new website. Henry, have you set up your WordPress site yet?
Yeah, I have.
Have you? Mm-hmm. Awesome.
In college.
Oh. Yeah. Both my kids have WordPress.com sites. So do I, by the way, LeoLaporte.com. Back when you were born, more than 20 years ago, I bought your name and your sister's name. Your domains, hoping that someday, and I bought a 20-year plan, by the way, figuring
that's great.
Someday they would want their names.
That's what I call vision.
Yeah. And now now you can do it at WordPress.com. WordPress was started so that anyone could publish their ideas. And now, and I'm so thrilled about this, thank you, Matt Mullenweg, the creator of WordPress. WordPress now powers 33% of the internet. One-third of all the websites in the world are running WordPress, and there's no easier way to run WordPress than WordPress.com. With powerful site-building tools, thousands of themes, and 24/7 support from real experts, who are very nice, by the way, WordPress.com lets you and everyone listening pursue whatever it is you love by creating a site that's free to start and has room to grow. And yes, of course, e-commerce. Great for a blog, but great for a portfolio, for an artist or a designer. great for a business. If you are a business and you do not have a website, what are you thinking? No, that Facebook page doesn't count. The Twitter account doesn't count. You need somewhere, your home on the web, that you control. When you upload files, audio, video, text, pictures to your WordPress site, they still belong to you. You can get them back anytime. There's no two-week trials. There's no hidden fees. You own your own content forever. WordPress.com. It's built to grow with you, to get you where you want to be tomorrow. I love WordPress. I'm so happy to be on WordPress.com. And by the way, you're not alone on WordPress.com. Some of the biggest publishers in the world use WordPress.com. Millions of people use WordPress.com every day to turn their dreams into reality. And you get 15% off any new plan purchase right now at WordPress.com/MacBreak. WordPress.com/MacBreak. 15% off your new website at the best place to host it in the world. WordPress.com/MacBreak. This has to be a bit of a shock to the system. Netflix has decided that in 2019, they are not going to allow subscribers to pay for their account through the iPhone app. Why? Because Apple takes 30%.
That was an easy note. I mean, I think that's an easy decision on Netflix. That's a lot of money.
It's $853 million in iOS revenue.
Holy moly.
Almost $1 billion. Yep. Isn't that amazing?
Android has not a whole lot of absolute advantages over Apple. But when I started testing out this Pixel book and reading comics on it, the ability to go to the Comixology app and just click a buy it now button and start reading it was like, oh my God, the same app that lets me read the comic book also lets me buy the comic book. So yeah, they're falling in line with pretty much everybody else who's selling content. It's just it's giving away free money to Apple for something that they're not really delivering. So,
well, you could say as a developer, well, if Apple's hosting the app and helping me market the app, that maybe that's worth a 30% shake. But if it's a subscription fee, that's basically rent seeking.
It's not as though people were not going to be subscribing to Netflix unless, oh wow, Netflix. They're actually just sort of handing money to Apple as opposed to Apple helping Netflix do anything. So
it is the number one grossing app on the App Store, Netflix.
and I think that Apple could easily do things that are basically how much do you gross with the store changes your percentage. So you know when you are a little company, admittedly you are benefiting more from Apple than they are benefiting from you. So 30% might make sense. When you are bringing in that much money, it might make more sense to be 2.5% or 5% or something that, and it just comes down to Apple created 850 million reasons to do it.
We know they're open to it because they lowered after the first year subscription cut. Yeah. In fact, partly probably because of Netflix to 15% after year one.
Right.
So I'm sure they're open to this idea.
I think a sliding scale that provides discounts. Because, I mean, I'm in the same state, Andy, on the other side of that. Is like this is one of those eye-rolling things. Every time I want to buy an Audible, book or... just like, you have to add it to the wish list, and then you have to remember to go back to a desktop, which I don't spend much time on anymore. And then I have to remember to order that book, and it isn't.
Annoying. I just use Mobile Safari.
I have to log into it. It's still
annoying. It's absolutely annoying. And sometimes it'll you click on it and then it hops into the Amazon app and then it's like, no, I'm not supposed to be here because you can't order through the Amazon app, and then it pops back to Mobile Safari. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Fortnite. How much do you think Apple made on Fortnite? I mean,
300 million.
Yeah. So Fortnite generated 100 million in revenue in the first 3 months. By July, it was $1 billion in-app, and this is just in-app purchases. It's a free to play game.
This is why Apple's future really is in services. That you can make a lot of money by selling the thing to the person, but you can make a lot more money by letting other people make and sell the thing and just take a cut off of that.
What does services include? It's besides App Store revenue,
App Store, iCloud,
Apple Pay.
Apple Pay.
Yep. Apple Music. Pay, yep. Did we do that
music,
one?
Apple Music. Yep.
What's the biggest revenue generator?
Oh, App Store.
App Store. Yeah.
And then number two, Google.
I think it's iCloud.
Because Google pays Apple $9 billion a year to be the search engine on Safari. By the way,
I don't know if they do that one, though.
That's rolled. No. They do.
Is that
rolled into the services revenue? So it's not all for consumers. Let me verify that, but I think that was the number.
That's wild. Wow. Okay, that's sneaky.
Nine,
and it's a good deal for both of them.
According to Fortune, Google to pay Apple. Whoa, wow! Now $12 billion. It was $9 billion last year. They expect it to be $12 billion in 2019. That's a services business.
I didn't realize that's where they put that money is in the services readout. That's
Again, access, like provide being the gatekeeper to give to the type of consumer that Apple has accumulated.
It's worth it to Google, obviously, valuable. Right?
Yeah. Well, also people do search through mobile. That's where they're looking for restaurants. That's where they're looking for everything. That's really they really want that spyglass. And also, let's be honest. I don't think an Apple user wants to dip into Safari or ask Siri. Excuse me. Ask Shlomo a question and say, Alta Vista says that the latest. Yeah, it's they want Google search.
We should mention that Apple and Google, neither one actually talks about these numbers. Because Apple, as you know, bundles everything all together under the word services. But this is what Goldman Sachs is estimating. And I imagine that they have analysts who know what they're talking about. GarageBand, 15 years old.
Such a great app.
That is amazing, isn't it? That it came out in 2003. What a revolution. 15 years ago this weekend, Steve Jobs introduced GarageBand at Macworld Expo 2004. You want to watch a little of that? That might be kind of fun.
John Mayer, yeah.
Yeah.
It works seamlessly together in iLife 04.
iLife.
But today, we're announcing something so cool. It's a fifth app that's going to be part of the iLife family, and its name is GarageBand.
It's kind of a funny name if you think back. I mean, we all know
GarageBand
it now.
GarageBand is a major new pro music tool, but it's for everyone. It's for all of us. And what
and we
it
know
does
it's for everyone because that's in Comic
Mac
Sans.
Into a pro
No. That's
back when you could use it.
No, it was Tekton or something. I know.
That was.
What was it?
Now, you could say, well.
You recognize that font? Andy's our font expert.
I'm saying that was remember when like Keynote, Steve Jobs always presented with like the next version of Keynote, and all the Keynote developers were like, please don't crash, please don't crash.
Was Keynote part of iLife by then?
It's going to be part of the iLife family.
No, but that's what he
was using it, but it wasn't yet available, right?
If you've got a kid that plays the piano.
So let's go ahead to
like a guitar and a keyboard, especially with
who's that?
The velocity being that you can bend into a note.
He's so young.
Back on grand piano now, but when it was for the guitar, you can hear it.
Probably he's not very tattooed at that point either.
It's pretty cool that they got John Mayer to demonstrate GarageBand. That's pretty cool. That's the power of Jobs. Hey, wait a minute. Wasn't there a guy there with a camera streaming live? How come he's not banned for life?
It's our bats back on grand piano now, but when it was for the guitar, you can hear it.
This speaks a man in pain.
String noise in there, too, so it has the attack.
You know what? I don't. Let's see this guy. Look at that. See that?
How come he's not banned? That's a Sony.
Anyway, Henry, you used GarageBand, but then you moved to Logic, right? Which is also an amazing deal.
Oh, yeah.
God, what a great deal. Logic kind of GarageBand Pro, just as Final Cut was kind of iMovie Pro, right?
Yeah, I think you can still find it on the internet, though. The single coolest GarageBand file is when Trent Reznor bounced a bunch of so it's a whole song, Nine Inch Nails song, that's in GarageBand. Now, he didn't make it in GarageBand. He made it in Pro Tools, but he bounced all the tracks out. And it's just, you see the incredible, you know, what a master does when they build something out there. But what I will say about GarageBand is, you know, my kids went to, they were with their grandmother, and they went to an Apple store and they took a GarageBand class, and I came back and I was like, hey, what's that song you're playing? And my daughter was like, I made it. So, you know, I think that's the power of GarageBand is that, you know, my kids are sitting there making music and not just like, I mean, complex music and understanding the structure of it and how to put it together. And the fact that can be done on your computer as an old fogey, it's pretty amazing.
And do people, you know, Apple is always doing these little things like, what was the music sketch pad that was like voice memos? I can't even remember what it was called. It's like Clips. Apple keeps releasing these little apps on iOS, and they don't mention them again, and I think people forget they exist, but there was, wasn't there that great little, Jason Howell was using it. What's it called?
Oh, Music Memos?
Music Memos. Yeah, not Clips, Music like Memos. Yeah, something like that. I don't even have it on here.
Yeah, I don't think I have mine on. I'm sure Serenity Caldwell would have used that.
It was really cool. Yeah, you could basically, you know, go ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da, and it would turn it into music, and what a device. An amazing thing. All right. I want to do one more break, and then we will get your picks of the week, boys. Prepare for your picks of the week while we mention one of our long-term sponsors, a company I think that grew up with us, and we're really thrilled to have them as a continuing sponsor, IT Pro TV. Man, 2018 was a good year to get into IT. And I think 2019 is going to be an even better year, especially IT security, but every area of IT. This is an area where job growth is phenomenal. And if you've thought, hey, I know a lot about technology, you're listening to this show after all, well, I should get a job in IT. There's no time like the present to start a career in IT with IT Pro TV. No, no, we're not talking about going back to school or sitting through another boring slideshow snooze fest. No, no, my friends. IT Pro TV is kind of like Twit. In fact, they were inspired by Tech TV and Twit to create. They have now five studios in their Gainesville, Florida studio. They have an amazing bunch of trainers who are IT pros, IT experts, but also engaging and fun. And they create new content, hours of new content every week. I think they're up 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. Five studios times 40 hours. Hundreds of hours of new content every week. Over 4,000 hours of binge-worthy on-demand content in their library. Every IT cert, every IT topic you'd ever want to know, from CompTIA, the A+, and you know, Security Plus certs, to Cisco, EC Council, that's a Certified Ethical Hacker cert. That's an awesome cert. VMware, Don Pezet, Ronnie Wong, Cherokee Booze, they are great. They are the best. They present information in a talk show format that is engaging and fun. Just like us, they even have a, look at that, configure failover clustering. How about that? That's something you want to know. Actually, that is something you want to know. They have a chat room going on in the background, too, just like we do. You can stream it on your computer or your tablet, of course. There's Don interviewing people at the RSA conference. They go to RSA every year and get great content from them. Study basic syntax in PowerShell. You can stream it on your Chromecast, on your Roku. They have iOS and Android apps. They've got Amazon Fire TV app, a great Apple TV app. Anywhere you are, IT Pro TV can keep you company. Learn just by absorption, frankly. This is a perfect time for you to start your new career in IT or get the cert you've been missing. If you've already had a career in IT and you just want to get better or learn, I think keep your subscription going. And we've got a deal for you that makes it worthwhile. Go to the website, go.itpro.tv/MacBreak. That's go.itpro.tv/MacBreak. And get started with IT Pro TV. It's their biggest sale yet. The video-only subscription, that's the standard membership, listed on their site, $29 a month. Usually it's $57 a month. That is a huge deal. Plus, if you use the code MacBreak30, knock another 30% off, which means you can get started in IT or advance your career all for about $20 a month. Compare that to going to a professional school or even just buying the books. This is the easiest, most affordable, most fun way to get the certs you need, to get the job you want, and to keep that job you want. Go to the website, go.itpro.tv, go.itpro.tv/MacBreak. Don't forget that. And use the code MacBreak30 for an additional 30% off your membership. IT Pro TV, flexible training, binge-worthy content, life-changing results. We're big fans of Tim and Don and the Cherokee and Ronnie. The IT Pro TV team is amazing, and we are very glad to be partnered with them. go.itpro.tv/MacBreak for 30% off. It is time for your picks of the week. Let's let Micah start. He's our guest.
Okay. Yes. Well, I'm hoping that this pick has not been picked before.
I don't think, looking at the name, I don't remember anybody ever saying this.
Good. I'm glad. because the name is pretty great. It's called the Dongle Dangler. And this is just like, so I got this as a gift from a friend over Christmas. And it's just a simple, it's almost stupid how simple it is. It's just, it goes on your keychain and it's just a little headphone jack. And then you just slide your
hysterical
headphone to lightning jack adapter right there onto your keychain.
That's hysterical.
And then you always have it with you.
OMG. Does it fall off? Is it on really securely?
No, it's like, I'll have to do the, here, we'll do some Foley work here. Hold on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Listen to that click. That's serious.
Nice.
That's
click. Solid, and I mean, man. I'm shaking all my, I got too many keys on here. I'm shaking them and they're just fine.
Look at that.
That's the Dongle Dangler. It's only, it's like, it's $10 for two of them. Even less for one. You can get them in a bunch of different colors. It's so stupid that, like, I'm just mad at how simple it is, but I love it for
that.
What
a great gift that is. That's a very nice, that's a thoughtful gift.
Good little stocking stuffer.
Yeah. What is this? Oh, it's the Dongle Dangler, Micah. Very nice. Micah, on Amazon right now. Just search for Dongle Dangler in Amazon. Don't search outside Amazon.
Yeah, please. Yeah, don't just do a Google search for Dongle Dangler because I can't be held responsible for that.
Go into Amazon and find it. Great pick. I love that, Micah.
Thank you.
That's practically an Andy Anatko pick. What do you have for us, Andy?
Well, this was, we went off for a couple of weeks, and a lot of that was like people home for the holidays, and I had an unusual amount of tech support to do with friends and family, and which was made it very, very happy that I had an iFixit like Uber toolkit handy that has all of like the security screws, security bits you need to get into phones and tablets and all kinds of stuff, which is not to say that that people should be sending work to friends and family if there's an Apple store handy, but you never know when there's something simple that just requires you to like get at the a friend of mine had a bad interaction with a cup of like hot lemon water and a laptop, and it wasn't, the Apple stores were closed at that moment, and I was able to at least get the lemon scent at least wafting out, get the molecules flowing out of it. The thing is, they'll sell you just the tool you need to get into a device. I was missing, for instance, a P5 Pentalobe screwdriver when I needed to fix my own laptop a couple weeks ago. But the great thing about having this kit is that you will have everything, and you never know when you're going to be in a situation where you just need to get something done right now. And the third thing is, you'll make sure that when you do need to do this thing, you will have the right tool for that job. Over the years, I've accumulated a drawer of like dentist tools and guitar picks and things that work well for a certain situation. But this kit will have like a really good, well-made spudger for prying apart. Like they show a video where you're trying to replace a battery in a car fob, and you can't pry the two halves open, so you wind up jabbing a screwdriver in there, and then you wind up like just, you know, getting it open but scratching the hell out of the thing. Whereas you will have a proper plastic spudger that will get things open safely. It's great for those sort of tasks where it's not worth ordering something and waiting 2 days to get the tool. But if you have the right tool handy, you will absolutely use the right tool. Buy it once. The full kit is $60. If you just want to buy individual tools, you can buy less ambitious sets. I replaced my P6 Pentalobe for like, I don't know, like $10 or something like that. But buy it, put it in a drawer, have it handy, and suddenly you can solve problems without causing more damage than God inflicted.
We, of course, sponsors of many of our shows, and we're big fans. We gave them away as Christmas gifts a couple of years ago to hosts. So I agree. It's a great, great gift. $60 too, right? It's not very expensive.
Yeah, and it's so good that if you lend it to somebody, they'll deny later on that they lent it to you, and you have to decide whether it's
worth it. I don't know what you're talking about, Andy.
I had to buy another one. But thank you for that. It was a wonderful gift. I had to reflect upon the fact that it was a gift to me, and so that I've just learned something about somebody that was probably worth
that's
more than
$60. That's the real gift, isn't it, Andy? To know your friends. Alex Lindsay.
So I'm recommending one that I haven't used on the slopes yet. But I'm so excited looking at it. I have a friend of mine, Fred, was talking about this, and I opened up the app and I started, and I almost wanted to go skiing just because I was like looking through this app. It's called Slopes, and you can track your progress on the slopes. So I figured, you know, we're still in the winter, so this is your time to go out and ski. This is just the coolest, you know, app. You know, I went through a lot of it, and it is keeping track of your, you know, all the data. You know, the reason I'm interested in it is because it is, there's a lot coming, I think, around location-based data of, you know, what you're doing and how you're doing it and letting you create new games inside of that space. And I think that this is one of those things where it's keeping track of exactly, you know, how you went down the slope and your vertical drops and your average speed and all of those bits. It works with your watch. It works with your phone. It you know, you can share it with your friends and compete with each other or cover things and pay attention to it. And I just think it adds data in a really fun way. I haven't made it up to Tahoe yet, so I can't say that I've used it, but I have. It is my friend Fred has used it quite a bit and just loves it. And I downloaded it, and as soon as I saw it and I saw what he was doing with it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I want to go skiing just to play with it. So anyway, it's a cool little app.
Makes me want to take up skiing just to use it.
No.
I haven't skied in a long time.
But, who needs ankles?
But I think we're going to see. What's more interesting about this is you can download or just take a look at it. But think about how that's applied to lots of different recreational areas.
I think you're going to see more and more of this.
When I look at this app, it's not so much that it's the reason I recommended it was not so much that, you know, everyone's skiing, but that you should really look at it as location-based, you know, interactive experiences is going to be massive, especially as we see 5G come out. And there's a lot of opportunities there. And I think that this is just one of a glimpse at what the future is going
to
look like.
Just remember, if you're part of the U.S. Army ski team, you're not allowed to use Don't use this. It works with Strava, too, so you can post share your slopes data with your Strava friends. I had a couple of recommendations, but I'll save one because this one's timely. For those of us with the new iPads, we've been looking desperately, hoping for a replacement for Apple's kind of okay but overpriced Folio keyboard. The Brydge, BRYDGE, is now available for pre-order as of an hour and a half ago. And in fact, if you're in the first 1,000 customers to pre-order, you'll get it first, delivered by April 15th. I'm thinking by now they got 1,000 orders, but maybe not. So hie thee over to BRYDGE.com. Apple's Folio keyboard for the 12.9-inch iPad is almost $200. The Brydge is a little bit less. It's $150 for the 11-inch, $169.99 for the 12.9-inch. Comes in matching colors, either space gray or silver. I have not tried it, but I read Renee Ritchie's preview of it, and he really liked it. It's very stable, as Andy pointed out. Or was it you, Alex? Nowadays, you might want a case that keeps your iPad from bending.
I think Andy pointed that out. Yep.
You've seen it, Andy.
I've seen some, kind of, yes.
Micah? Have you seen it?
I'm willing to state that this is my favorite kind of keyboard for the iPad. It is so good that you're going to be sort of angry with you're going to be angry with Apple for not having made an iPad or even a MacBook with that folds like this.
Yeah, it does turn it more into like a laptop. It does not use the smart connector as the Apple keyboard.
That's
does.
The only bummer.
It's Bluetooth. It but yeah, I have to say, I've already pre-ordered it, and I'll have a review for you. I think I got in the first 1,000, so I'll have a review for you right about tax time. This is a good company. Brydge has done good stuff for a long time. And so I think I trust them enough to pre-order sight unseen. And you might want to, too, BRYDGE.com. Or wait till April when all the reviews come out. Or actually read Renee's review because he gave a very positive review on iMore.com.
Now remember, but if you wait until April, Your iPad, the bridge keyboard might not fit the curve of your iPad at that point. So just be warned.
Micah Sargent.
But it's perfectly normal. That bend is perfectly normal. It's perfect. Well within engineering tolerance.
Apple says it's okay. Don't freak out. I don't think I have a bend in mind, but I don't really want to put it on the table to find it.
I haven't looked at mine yet either. I keep on going, oh, I got to get around to it.
I'm like, don't look.
I'm happy right now, so why bother?
Micah Sargent also writes for iMore, and he's also found at chihuahua.coffee on the Twitter at Micah, M-I-K-A-H, Sargent, S-A-R-G-E-N-T. Thank you for being here, Micah.
Hey, it was such a pleasure to be here. Thanks a lot.
It's a lot of fun. I was going to, if Renee had been here, I would have shown him my Pokeball, my Pokemon Go ball.
Oh, boy, yeah. He is Poke Wild.
He's Poke Wild. We're best friends on Pokemon Go, so I know all about that. But I'll talk to him next week about this. Alex Lindsay, thank you so much for being in studio with us, as always. If you want to know what Alex is up to, best thing to do is follow him on Twitter, AlexLindsay. You got anything coming up?
Nope.
Nothing
I can talk about.
Nope.
So, but otherwise, I do post more regularly on Twitter. I've kind of settled into Twitter, and I don't think it's going to adjust that much.
Okay. I guess whatever that means is good to know.
It means I like to post stuff on Twitter.
I've settled into Twitter, he says.
I post in a lot of places, but mostly what I post is just Twitter, because I don't really do a lot of the other ones, and so I don't know why I just like my ADD brain.
That's why.
Just likes 200, and I've gotten really good at the 250 characters.
Oh, really?
And I get usually right plus or minus five all the time.
Good.
Sorry about that if you're reading them, but
Andy Anatko, we can hear him every week on WGBH Boston, Boston Public Radio, and read his stuff at ihnatko.com. Anything you want to plug?
Posted a piece on Fast Company late yesterday about the new Samsung app on the new Apple app on Samsung TVs.
You know all about it then. Uh-oh. Perfect timing. He's completely frozen.
I blame his Samsung TV.
As the show wraps up. There he is. He's back.
Should have had Fast that Apple branded Faraday cage. I gotcha.
The NSA was worried about the explosive stuff that I was talking about. But as usual, how much did you get before I decided to take a break there?
And I forgot the Fast Company thing. I think that's the most important,
okay,
right?
That's good.
Yep. He's reviewing the new Samsung TV. I think I heard him say that.
Oh, no. I wrote a piece about it and what it means in the bigger picture. And then just go to anatko.com and anatko on Twitter for other links.
So there you go. I forgot to mention Micah's podcast, Lucid, all about lucid dreaming, he does with Tori Folk. How is the lucid dreaming going?
Well, we actually had to go on a creative hiatus on that one. So I would love to plug
too much time sleeping.
Yeah, exactly.
How about Somehow I Manage? How about that? Are you still doing that?
That's the one. Yeah,
okay,
Somehow
good.
I Manage. We do that weekly. If you're a fan of The Office.
Oh, you do it with Tiff. That's nice.
Yeah, Tiffany Arment and I talk about The Office every week. We watch an episode and talk about it. It comes out every Thursday.
Wait a minute. The Office, that old show?
That old show. It is going through a renaissance right now.
They're already up to episode 40. How many episodes are there?
Oh, a billion. There are nine seasons and a bunch of episodes. And like it's on Netflix and new people are getting into the show.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm an old school super fan of it. So is Tiff. And yeah, we very much love that show and talk about it every week.
Just looking at the titles brings back memories like Prison Mike. That was a good episode.
Mike.
Pretzel Day. Who could forget? Oh man, I'm gonna have to go back and listen to all of these. That's awesome.
Aw,
yeah. Bedside Bacon.
Clips from the show and everything. So.
Oh, you do. They let you do that, or do you just do it? Anyway?
Well, we try to say there's
editorial.
A reason to do some fair use stuff, right?
Yeah, that's fair use. So you don't do the British version, just the American version.
Just the American version, yeah. The British version, I'm not going to go into too much here, but the British version was very much meant to be written as sort of dark comedy, right. And it's sort of sad. And the first season of the American version was that way. And then producers realized, hey, if we want to keep the show around, we kind of got to make it more positive.
Yeah.
And so you'll notice in season two, that sort of changes and it gets a lot better, I think.
Should I start the show and your podcast simultaneously?
If you'd like to, if you want to go back and
no, I just mean like run them. Like, should I listen to your podcast while I'm watching?
No, it's not commentary. It's sort of post show breakdown of stuff. And we also talk about trivia and things that aren't mentioned in the show sort of how the producers like. It's a bunch of insight into what sort of goes into this episode.
That was one of the greatest shows of all time, maybe the greatest comedy sitcom of all time.
I agree. Yeah. I'm glad that you feel that way. Yeah.
Thank you, Micah. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Alex. We appreciate your being here, too. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday around about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. That'd be, I think, 1800 UTC. I'll tell you what. Here's the deal. If you want to watch live, you can go to twit.tv/live or listen because we have a audio stream as well. And if you do that, you should be in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. That's kind of like the commentary track for the show going on in the chat room. But you don't have to because we know you're busy and we do the show in the middle of the workday. So here's the easiest thing to do. Just go to twit.tv/MBW. Download any episode you want. Listen as you want. And the most convenient thing to do would be subscribe in your favorite podcast app. That way it's there. You know, the minute we're done and the editors put it out, you can get a copy and it automatically on your phone and you can listen whenever you feel like it. Either way, we hope you will come back each and every Tuesday to Mac Break Weekly. But now I'm sad to say it's time to go back to work because break time is over. Bye-bye.